All right, time for another Techie Talk with the State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy. Techie, how you doing?
Hey, Joe. It's not too bad for a warm and sunny Wednesday.
I know. Here we go. Heat wave number three of the summer. Hopefully it's the last one, too.
Well, we're still in August. It's the hottest month of the year in Massachusetts. And this has definitely been more than usual weather years. I mean, last year, remember, we're talking about drought conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not. And I'm sorry to say, a lot of us who are trying to do outdoor gatherings or picnics or trying to get to, you know, outdoor type events, hiking or biking or even just sitting in your yard. It has been a little bit way late this year, but a sheer volume of rain.
It's incredible.
My lawn has been cut on a good schedule because every time I try to get out there the weekend, it's soaking.
I know. I'm dying to see what the fall harvest is going to look like. I think everything's going to kind of come in at once.
We got a lot of mushrooms floating around my yard. I didn't realize I had such issues with spores until this year.
Right. Hey, this is a good point. Speaking of harvest, so let's remind folks again about the August Moon Festival coming up on Sunday.
Oh, yes. There's August Moon Festival on Sunday, 12 to 4. Like I said last time, I would not have a table this year. Supply chain plus trying to get volunteers to pass on my goodies doesn't work well. But I'll be back next year if we're able to do so next year. Who knows these days anymore, right? I have no idea. But it is a socially distanced event. The vendors are spread off considerably. They did some rapid attempt on getting some entertainment on stage. Kiwi TV has always been a great participant there in the past. And they'll try to keep people as part as much as possible. Not suggesting you can't be near people, but they don't want people a shoulder-to-shoulder situation where you can't move together for long periods of time.
Right.
And, you know, we know some people would not mask up because they're outdoors. I understand. I really do. I do suspect also a lot of people also mask up, especially after the Provincetown situation. So, the problem of not having a uniform rule, you know, it's all recommendations, you know, has created some spot work. But if you got time to swing by for a short period, it is a trimmed down event. I'm only going to be staying for a very short period at the beginning. And then, you know, everyone's going to try to enjoy the day best they can. Also, sales tax weekend this week.
Oh, that's right, too. Yeah.
So I do understand. I think Saturday might rain heavily. So curbside pickup, we've all learned how to do that. So, maybe telephone your favorite small business and put an order aside and pay in advance by credit card. Pay online and arrange pickup. But, sales tax weekend's coming up will give a quick boost in the arm to local retailers. And we are back to school. So it's a good time to get your school supplies.
Yeah, definitely. It's the 34th annual, I think, August Moon this year. And Philip Chong from Quarry tells me they're going to have a rock climbing wall, or at least one of those, portable climbing walls, all kinds of games and live entertainment. And also Mana Community Health Center will be having a pop-up vaccination clinic there, too.
Absolutely. Although Philip tried to tell me to do the rock climbing. Not inclined to do that, guys. So.
That's just for little kids who have no fear.
Yeah, I don't think I will fare well. But the pop-up clinic is one that I put on my social media for tomorrow. We actually had another pop-up clinic the last week at QCAP. There'll be another one coming in September. Quincy's vaccination rates floating around 62%+, give or take some decimal points. So we're getting there. But it's still predominantly highly vaccination of people over the age of 70, 75. And it tapers off once you get below 40, and very much so once you get below 30. So if you have not gotten vaccinated, I know I still encourage you to do so. The Delta variant is out there. Delta variant is now considered to be as infectious as the chickenpox. For those of us who are old enough to be pre-chickenpox vaccinated, knows what it like when it got into our classrooms as children. Your entire class was pretty much out of commission.
That's right.
Several days and sometimes a little more than a week or two. So the CDC is speculating right now. They haven't got a final study, but they're looking at its chickenpox level, which is between 8 and 10 people infected for every one infected person. Yeah, to put in perspective, the original COVID-19 virus, which I can't believe again, we're using the word original, is 2.5 people per infected person.
Yep.
So this is well past, it's exponential. So it's like several, it's not several hundreds because it's exponential. So it's more like 1,000% times more infectious, not hundreds. More infectious.
Right. Yeah. As I've heard many public health experts say, as the situation right now is either you're vaccinated or you're going to get Delta, period.
It does sum it up correctly. And there, if you don't believe it's real, there are legitimate test cases like globally and in the US, especially in the deep south, especially places like Louisiana, which has a very, very low vaccination rate. And has Delta running rampant. In certain communities, there are no ICU beds. We've experienced this here in Massachusetts. And a hospital system in host states are going to get overrun. Again, we've been here before ourselves, where we're in the tips of the glass overfilling regarding the lack of space of hospital beds. So there are, this is real. There are cases in the U.S. See it globally. Australia is yet another lockdown. If you want to see what happened to Delta in the wintertime, again, Australia is wintertime.
Right.
They have Delta running rapid. They have a challenge getting vaccine into the country. It's not because they don't want to get vaccinated. They don't have vaccination opportunity. And they really have engaged in what we call the draconian lockdown, where police is on the streets telling people to stay home, escorting you home. I mean, true lockdown, everybody. Right. Not what we do here. Because they can't get, you need to get it under control. So wintertime there is the study for us when we get to our winter here.
Do you think, and this has been brought up, you know, there should be a statewide mask mandate, Tacky?
You know, I have to be frank about this. It's lack of uniformity is causing enormous confusion around everybody. And we've had this happen throughout COVID, where it's like a recommendation, but you don't have to do it. You know, you can, every community is now doing spotty ones. Salem is the latest one to do an indoor mask mandate. It's very challenging for the general public to understand what they should and should not do. It's left to your personal responsibility. Right now, Delta is still believed to be transmissible. You get Delta, you can give it over to someone else. You may be perfectly fine. You may not even feel sick, but you could give it to somebody else. And if you're, again, mask keeps germs to you. It's a respiratory disease. So if you are infected, it keeps it to you. Conversely, if you're not infected, you have a mask on, it reduces the odds of you getting Delta, but it doesn't guarantee you won't. If you have two people wearing masks, the odds of transmission is very low.
Right.
One person wears a mask, that odds shift significantly, but it's not like you're, you know, no protection.
Right.
You definitely do have protection, but it's not the same as two. So, you know, I'm hoping at some stage that the governor will at least recommend a mask mandate a little more strongly. The challenge right now is we're not in a state of emergency anymore.
Right.
So if a governor to try to instigate a mandatory mask mandate, he has to reinitialize the state of emergency. And I don't believe he's inclined to do that unless there's a huge dramatic jump in the numbers and it's widespread. Communities on a local level, some communities have not rescinded the state of emergency. I don't know which ones, but there's two types, the municipal state of emergency and state of emergency at a state level. So places like, and you also get passed ordinance. Clearly, Salem's are passing ordinances regarding temporary mask mandates. So again, folks, I mean, some reason people think this is real political. It ain't political at all. This is all about keeping yourself alive and your friends alive. You know, I've heard, well, it hurts my business. Well, you know, you can choose. I mean, you can try to put your customers and you at risk or not. You know, I've heard from other industries that are front-facing during pandemic, they're open and not surprising, people who run the facilities got COVID. The most famous one locally is the fruit market over by Star Market, the fruit shop, which name escapes me.
Mignosis.
Yes. You know, the owners got COVID.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Hmm. Yeah, so they had to do a lot of contact tracing to customers. So, I mean, they had to close. They were sick. Do you want someone to counter hang you sick when they're sick and giving you food?
Obviously, yeah. So there's a direct impact on your business right there.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I get nervous when you see any kind of news report and businesses really don't care about the customers in the sense of their safety. And if any business owner doesn't care about your safety, I wouldn't patronize them.
Yeah. Speaking of, can we talk a bit about, I'm just reading here from the Statehouse News Service, the unemployment rate is just below 5% now. Business confidence is pretty good. Do you think that will last?
I think the real test is coming up in October. Every time we get to a tax period, it will give us an idea where the economy is going. So October is when people who have delayed paying their taxes this past May can do their delay filing. And the state will close their books after those delayed filing taxes have been submitted. The summer months have been hard for a lot of restaurants, not just because of short labor. We're very well delivery shortage issues with retail and restaurants, but it's also been so wet.
Yes. Yeah.
Outdoor dining has been very popular, and it's hard to have outdoor dining when you have thunderstorms every third day.
Right. And there are people that just won't dine indoors at all. So I'm sure that's impacting business. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been dining indoors. I've been taking advantage of the booths that have the plexiglass around it.
Yep.
To enjoy it. It's actually quieter inside the booth now and talk to people, but also creates that sense of security.
Right.
Notice some tables have been kept further apart in restaurants because there's, again, safety of customers. Sick customers mean your business closed down.
That's right.
And, you know, retailers the same way. Some are still doing some occupational limits. I've seen some indoors trying to not overcrowd. But even I went to the plaza last time, the Social Plaza, quite a few storefronts are closed.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, not like half the plaza's closed, but, you know, more than a few I've noticed I have closed. I don't know, maybe the rent went up or COVID got them in. I have no idea. But
okay.
The place is, you know, once again, changing around. Quincy has been fairly spared in its retail for the most part. I'm not saying it's not, people have closed. I mean, people have closed, but I mean, it's not like downtown Boston where they're not serving lunch anymore in a lot of restaurants around because there's nobody around.
Yeah.
That's, you know, a good chunk of your business gone because people aren't working in Boston. So at 5%, you know, under 6% unemployment rate is a good sign. I do think once unemployment benefit expansion ends in October, you will see more people getting back into the workforce. But also do believe that some places will be hard to replace folks because certain types of skilled labor, you know, may not have them come back because, frankly, they were too ill to return to work or they may have passed on.
Mm.
It's kind of one of those sad situations where people aren't discussing this. 18,000 people plus have died in Massachusetts. This, you know, I do know a significant number is senior citizens, but there's also significant numbers of under 60 years old. Mm-hmm. Who is part of our workforce. And it's, you know, this tragedy has a ripple effect on our families, our loved ones, and in the economy. You know, it affects our workforce and it affects our consumer confidence. So the business community, you know, is feeling better because the economy is growing. People are spending that money they've been saving up all last year. But people are also changing how they shop and how they do business. As you point out, not everyone wants to use a restaurant. A takeout is more expensive for restaurants because of the plastic goods and other materials they provide you.
Yeah, people don't think about that, but that is definitely an added cost, yeah.
Definitely see restaurants to add cost to their business because of takeout. They need to recoup that money for the materials. So I do think that there'll be some inflationary components, which is not 100% driven by a more expanded unemployment or even the federal stimulus money. I think some of the cost of living is going to go up because they have to support their consumer base. So
yeah.
It's a good sign. We'll wait to see how October brings. Again, once we get to winter months, things will change again. You know, I'll be cautiously optimistic, but I mean, consumer confidence has also been rising.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're also in Massachusetts. We'll get well over 70 plus 75% full vaccination by Thanksgiving. I'm very confident of that. So I think there's a degree of confidence tied to our ability to vaccinate.
Yeah, it's so key because, I mean, there wouldn't even be a Delta variant if you know, vaccinations had been more successful early on.
Yep, there's been over 6,600 mutations and probably a lot more by the last time that was reported back in June.
Right.
And again, there'll be more mutations. There's only a very small number of mutations that create basically an evolutionary advantage against us, for lack of a better term. It's been Alpha, Delta, Lambda, and what's the other beta? Beta. So yep. Alpha, beta, delta, lambda. So you know, the most vicious one in the set is right now delta in terms of infection rate. So, but you're right. If we all got vaccination, the virus has nowhere to go but die, and as a result, it doesn't have a chance to mutate.
Right. And speaking of the federal stimulus, any more progress on Beacon Hill about what how Massachusetts is going to use that?
I don't know. I don't have any new insight on that at the moment. August is a fairly quiet month. However, mm-hmm. receiving many emails from many advocacy groups telling us how to spare money. So
it's I'm sure that's true.
Ranging from the business community to not-for-profit services, they've all been weighing in. We do appreciate their weigh in and what their priorities are. So I suspect there'll be more emails and phone calls coming over the next several weeks from more organizations who would like to weigh in on how to spend the money. But more importantly, the, you know, the U.S. Senate, you know, has put out the $1 trillion-plus infrastructure bill,
right,
which have significant impact in Massachusetts if the House passes
it. Yes, they probably will. Yeah.
Yeah, a road of bridges and even broadband. You know, we're lucky to live in Quincy. Overall, broadband is pretty good in terms of access. I mean, not everybody's having perfect access, but pretty good overall.
Yeah. Western part of the state, not so much. Yeah.
The Cape and the western part of the state in particular, yeah. Cape Cod and western part of the state.
Yeah.
Like, probably Sue Moran is out of Barnstable. We've had by the internet during public hearings, which you're welcome to watch on my Facebook page about topics there. So, you know, we've experienced this in the legislature, and people have been seeing this in the public forum online as the legislature run the hearings, the impact of broadband in their communities.
Yeah, and actually, if the House passes the infrastructure bill as is now, Massachusetts stands to get $8 billion, with a B, dollars.
Yeah. I think it's dispersed over the course of 5 years, or is it 10?
I thought it was five, but it, yeah.
5 years, I think it's five. So, I mean, that's road and bridges and broadband and public transit and a whole lot of stuff. So, obviously, you know, Massachusetts is a good advantage because of our strong Democratic legislative delegation in the Democratic Congress right now.
Yep.
And, you know, and ability to get stuff done. I mean, he did pass 69 votes in the U.S. Senate,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's well into, you know, veto override territory, which mm-hmm. didn't have a problem with the president. But, I mean, it shows that you can actually get some stuff done when you pull people's ideas together. They trimmed it down significantly from the president's position. And that was expected. You know, when you're negotiating, you want to start high and then, you know, whittle you down to some place that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So very standard negotiation process paid off on getting something done. And I think it's the first infrastructure bill since Obama's administration, at the end of his first term.
That is correct, yep.
So it's taken Congress a decade for another infrastructure bill after talking about it forever. Meanwhile, we've been passing transportation bond bills every 2 to 3 years. With the most recent one we passed this December, which is just around $17 or $18 billion on our front. Over the course of, I think, 20 plus years.
Okay, all right.
So Fed money coming down will let us forestall using more state bonding if the governor so desires.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We control the bond now, we just authorize. The governor wants to continue to use more bond money at the state level. But he also can, you know, use some Fed money to kind of offset some of the bond projects.
Yeah, how is local aid looking for Quincy this year, Tacky?
Well, very strong. I mean, the state budget passed local aid in record numbers because the lottery has gone gangbusters well ahead of projections, as well as our safe and supportive schools have also gone up. So now you're making me look it up again, what the number looks like.
Can't you just rattle these numbers off the top of your head? Come on.
The ability to rattle has been getting more challenged. I'm like scrolling my phone here trying to find those exact numbers.
As I recall, it was it's up like $4 million, I think, here in Quincy, something like that.
Yeah, the big significant number is actually the education money.
Yeah, yeah, the Student Opportunities Act, right, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, because the education money. In particular, has been the Student Reform Act
yeah.
That we did vote on. the beginning of the prior cycle before COVID hit.
Yes.
So as a result, we didn't fund it during COVID because we didn't know what we were doing. But then we get to post-COVID and our revenue numbers are significantly stronger than ever in terms of our recovery that we didn't know. So we're able to do that. So Quincy Public Schools got $31.8 million. That's about almost $7 million to normally they get. They would used to get about 24, 25 band. And local aid for Quincy is about $20.9 million, which is also up about $400,000. But the significant increases in education funding. So that's about $52-ish million from the state on just two line items against the city's $344 million budget.
Something like that, yeah.
So the state continues to be a significant partner for municipalities and funding schools in local aid, particularly in Quincy. That does include things like senior center, you know, to get money for that, you know, mm-hmm. school breakfast assistance, to get money for that, reimbursement program, a circuit breaker program regarding special education students. You know, there's all kinds of other state funds that aren't part of local aid, but that are essential for Quincy services that you may never realize.
That's right, yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the hate crimes task force, Jackie? It's, I know the governor signed it, I think last week after it passed the legislature, but it's really kind of vague on specifics and broad on generalities, but what essentially is it?
Well, that's what happens in legislative committees, right? We do that sometimes. So it's a very broad look regarding hate crime issues in Massachusetts and, you know, what the general statistics are and what is some of the potential causes, as well as perhaps recommendations on legal changes. It is extremely broad because it looks at very broad band. It doesn't focus in like specifically on hate crime statistics and whether it's done correctly or very specifically in terms of, you know, does the hate crime law needs to change? I do know for a fact, one of the major challenges nationally is collecting hate crime data.
Okay.
All right. That is no problem. It's up to the municipal police, or in the case of, you know, the United Massachusetts County Police, to determine if there's a hate crime there, to recommend to the district attorney's office to look into it more, to pursue it.
Is that because it's underreported by the victim?
Well, it's actually the victim doesn't report hate crimes. Actually, the police makes that determination.
Okay.
So under Kelly versus Commonwealth, which is the statute that determines hate crime law test, they're supposed to look at the tally of circumstances to determine whether the race or minority status, you know, protected status class mm-hmm. is a part of the factor of the crime.
Part of a factor, okay.
One of the factors of the crime being committed. So if it's an armed robbery and they determine that, the police determine that your race or other particular class status is a factor of why they committed the crime.
Yeah.
It's a hate crime.
Okay. So it could be both then, right? It could be an armed robbery. It could also be a hate crime.
That's correct.
Okay.
So the armed robbery is the underlying crime.
Okay.
If the armed robbery has a racial component, then hate crime charges also put on top of that.
Okay.
You have to commit a crime first, and then it's an element of the crime.
And is the penalty different if a hate crime is part of that component?
It adds an additional penalty, but often if you have like murder, the murder penalty is so more severe. The hate crime penalty will be charged on, but realistically speaking, I mean, you're going to get 20 years in prison with, you know, parole in 10. The hate crimes charge, you know, could tack on, you know, a fine another couple of years. But
okay.
I mean, let's be honest about this, folks. You're going to tag it up. You're going to do that. It's like gun charges, right? You commit a crime with a charge to murder somebody. They're going to put you an illegal gun charge. But they got you red-handed, got you red-handed, you know, with straight up murder one.
Yeah.
20 to life.
Yeah.
That gun charge doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I know. Typically, it's just, you know, extraneous charges that the prosecution throws in there to just to throw everything at the wall, basically.
Well, you have to throw everything away. You charge everything because you're charging with elements of a crime, which can be a crime to be an element of a crime.
Yeah.
Right? You have an illegal gun ownership. That is the cause of the murder because you shot somebody and killed the individual intentionally. You got murder one. And then, you know, the gun is illegally owned, but you need the gun to commit the crime. Same thing on racially motivated, that if it's a series of people being attacked that are racially motivated, and you decide just to go to murder spree specifically targeting those individuals.
Okay.
Yeah. And you shoot some extra people along the way because they have to be in the way. You know, but your original target is the people of a certain race or other protected group. You know, the hate crime charge is also put on top of it.
Okay, so the task force is charged with trying to figure out how much of a problem it is, then.
Well, that's exactly it, because one reason you have to put these charges on, because it's part of the data collection.
Yep.
So it gives an idea of how hate crimes are with data collection. So back in the example of murder, obviously the murder charge overrides all the other charges with most of the sentencing. But, you know, even though they may not pursue a sentencing for the hate crime charge, you can still be convicted of it, and you can still be charged with it. Mm-hmm. And that data is crucial on the charging to show that the investigation has been done and that this is a hate-motivated issue. But, you know, even though it's not sentenced that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I always get, like, you know, certain advocacy groups telling us, oh, well, you mean you should enforce the law regarding, you know, illegal gun ownership. And I'm like, yeah, but when you do armed robbery with assault and battery and attempted murder, they'll charge you with the illegal gun. But the reality is the other charges are so much more severe than the illegal gun charge that, you know, they'll strip that one off when sentencing occurs. Even though you are guilty of it, they will find you guilty of it. They're not going to, you know, exchange, you know, 6 months in a fine versus,
yeah,
you know, 15 years for murder.
Yeah. It's basically quote unquote for the record. That way, you know, it's everything is logged correctly. It is a law that has been violated, so it needs to be documented.
Absolutely, and that data sets are very important for public policymakers like myself. So bad data equals bad public policy.
Right. Yeah.
People always make these other arguments to me, and I just look at them like, you really need to think about totality and just not the narrow issue.
Yep.
And hate crimes, you know, sounds like a narrow issue, but really it's a totality issue about what is the underlying factor of why you committed that crime.
Yeah. So does the task force report to the legislature, to the administration? How does that data get handled?
Yeah, I mean, they file a report with the legislature.
Okay.
And then, you know, we can look at the data. It's a public record. So I mean, anybody can get their hands on, including the administration.
Okay.
So, you know, hopefully they'll make some more recommendations on this moving forward about what they see on the various data sets and what's motivating these different situations. And, you know, and then maybe, and, you know, sometimes looking at the broader picture about discrimination as a whole, but they're, you know, trying to focus on criminal matters.
Yeah, yeah. How is police reform going, by the way, Tacky? Is there anything to talk about there?
Well, we fully funded the police reform training program.
Yeah.
The governor is still trying to get it up and running, but I mean, it's actually on top of the existing training program we have. So it isn't like we dismantled the existing program. We have a police training program. I think people did not understand that when we did police reform. So you're basically just taking the same group and you're changing the name, and you have to add more people in various commissions and advisory committees beneath that. Okay. The big challenge, of course, is all these special commissions that have been set up. So, like, you know, the probation, racial probation commission, the racial systemic racism commission. I mean, those commissions have all been up and running.
Okay, so it's happening. And last time we talked, I think we touched a little bit on the redistricting issue. Anything new there?
Well, Senator Keenan says we're going to see data by August 12th. Today's August 11th. So checking in with me tomorrow to see if she has any data sets by the 12th.
You know, where is he getting the data that nobody else can get?
I don't know. It was in the Quincy Sun. So like, I read, I was like, okay, yes, John knows something I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I've been getting mixed dates depending on what press release you look at the U.S. Census website. So it's not been helpful. But if the data comes out this month, you know, hopefully, you know, cities and towns can more, you know, rapidly, you know, put together some precincts that they can get done in early September. And we can move on our front by mid-October to get something to govern. You know, what would be set on precincts as opposed to using census blocks.
Yeah, I mean, the city council is having a special meeting next week, actually, to determine the early voting locations.
Yeah, and they're significant. Well, yeah, they're significant because the precincts won't change in time for the current municipal election. They'll change in time for 2 years from now, but not the current one. So that's one of the drawbacks of the late census, because people would be running in new precincts right now if the census data came out on time.
Yeah.
As some of you may have known, they've been delaying complete census count, you know, all through last summer because of COVID. And Quincy did actually very well in the self-reporting, but you also get people out the doors, telephones to get people to finish, to remind them to fill out the census. So I'm hoping the census data comes out this month, sooner than later, if it's true that Senator Keenan says it's going to be coming out this week.
okay.
That's my fingers.
Yes. Well, if he gets it, I hope he, you know, shares it far and wide. Yeah.
The municipalities will be able to more rapidly move on their data. Again, it's all computerized, these things. It isn't like we're sitting on a crayons anymore.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I saw an interesting story the other day from the Census Bureau that an inordinate number of people didn't answer a whole lot of questions, like when it comes to family size or gender or income. And the Bureau was perplexed as to why that was. Why do you think that might be?
Well, we got a lot of strange mixed messaging over the last couple of years of a lot of things. You know, obviously Congress wasn't very helpful because the Trump administration was fighting about what to put on and off a census sheet, even though the U.S. Congress gets to decide what goes on and off the census sheet. This is not an arbitrary decision by the executive branch. It actually has to be approved by Congress.
Yeah.
So that has caused part of the problem. The other one is, of course, data security and privacy. People are very conscious and very aware of your data being loose and, you know, floating in the air out there. And the U.S. Census data is not a single individual data. It's aggregate data. And they have to hold that data for, I think, well into three generations before they can release information for things like Ancestry.com.
I see.
You know, all those kind of records sit there for an extraordinarily long period of time. I'll be dead and gone before it comes out.
Right, right. And
there's also federal penalties for releasing any data, period, that has any kind of personal information. This is a federal crime. So it is very safe and secure to get the information out. Your name isn't on that census form, by the way. People don't realize it's all code numbers. And you use public available information on RNC books and the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, people who know what a phone book is, they're still watching. You know, there's that public accessible data, people's home addresses, right?
Yes.
So I'm not surprised. I mean, people have been very concerned about their personal information, and I very likely left sections blank. They felt it was too sensitive, even though they probably 10 years ago filled the whole thing out.
Yeah, that's true. They've seen it in the cities, the municipal census also, low return rates or you know, incomplete returns, unfortunately, and it impacts you know, grant money from the federal government.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll give you a simple example regarding Chapter 90 money, which is the road and bridge money.
Yeah.
One of the factors associated with getting money is actually population size.
Yep.
So I'm not saying we should lie on our forms. We absolutely should not lie on the forms, but I mean, accurate data locks us in for 10 years. So if you do not have accurate data in 2020, you do not get a chance to correct it. 2030 is the next chance to actually collect data and actual numbers. Everything between is projections.
Yeah, and here in Quincy, I know they're hoping for over 100,000 because that would change the whole status of the city when it comes to CDBG money and other grant monies.
Well, absolutely. And also, there's another thing going to U.S. Census they should be aware of that is not a scam. Is the census collecting a sampling data. They don't do every single person with sampling data. Now they're doing sampling data on COVID impacts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They want to know how it impacts you economically, how it impacts your health, and it impacts your family. Mm-hmm. So you can collect census data. Again, it helps policymakers both at the federal and state level to have a better grasp of what the sampling survey shows. And they'll do extrapolation by the formulas to a bigger picture. But, you know, that is crucial. They've been doing everything by text messaging to emails to letters. If you do have a question if it's real or not, obviously you can call my office. Email us the screenshots and links, and we'll take a peek ourselves and double check with the relative agencies to confirm if it's real or not. But yeah, be aware, there's going to be more. They did some sampling this past fall. Mm-hmm. You'll be seeing more sampling probably coming up this fall.
Okay.
You know, it won't be like 100 questions, but they want to know, generally speaking, you know, what the impact is economically to you, your health, your mental being, your physical health. Again, this is essential for policymakers, so we don't work in a vacuum. You don't want us working in a vacuum, folks. I mean, the last thing you want is just make data up. I don't like doing that. It's not good. I mean, I'll give you an example. We did a big hearing on wheelchair warranties, which is actually pretty fascinating, about how a lot of folks are unable to get their wheelchairs repaired or replaced pursuant to wheelchair lending law. Problem. I have no idea how the wheelchair industry works. So I'm actually very, very interested in helping them out in terms of changing consumer statutes to get a better service. But I don't understand how the industry works. I have no statistics of how many there are. I have no statistics on how the distribution system works and how many distribute, how many repair centers, who are the ones actually doing it. You know, I need to learn this entire industry before I start putting up consumer-related issues on behalf of customers.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, so the choice to have me like work in a vacuum is to just do this, or I can try to learn about an industry I know nothing about to see if we can find a way to craft consumer laws that will definitely impact a group that needs it and try to stimulate an industry to perform.
See, this is very interesting to me. This is really an inside look at how the legislative process works. You're really kind of peeling back the cover and bearing, you know, how laws are made and how this works. I think some people think it's just, you know, magic or you just instinctively know, you know, what's going on. But this proves that, I mean, you're interactive, you know, with the people that you represent. So that's I just learned something.
Yeah, I mean, just because of a great idea and it seems like common sense doesn't mean the idea is any good. I have a lot of ideas. Seems like common sense. Then I look at it and realize, okay, this is what I thought would happen. But again, this also creates a time crunch. I don't have time for every single issue to get deep weeds. You know, part of the reason our public hearing process, the reason we receive a lot of written testimony, why you have advocacy groups, aka special interest folks,
right?
Advocacy, your special interest, to come by and tell us, you know, what they think, provide us data, provide us news articles around the country, compile information for us, get reports, share personal experiences. And that's an important part of the public hearing process, public input process for committee to look at and try to decipher and break down and figure out where the truth lies in some cases. And we do everything independently. So people will give us information independently. So then we can take a look and do some comparisons. Determine that it's solvable by a statutory change. We try to figure out how to make that work. And sometimes, believe it or not, we don't have to do anything at all. The capitalism will take over for us.
Right. Yeah. Just the fact that it's been promoted and brought to the public awareness will take care of it.
And the industry will take care of itself. And sometimes competition, you know, I just do believe competition helps consumers. Mm-hmm. You know, industries trying to evolve and change to be better. COVID is now an example of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to be competitive as a business today in the COVID safety world, you better evolve. Otherwise, consumer confidence in you as a business goes down, and then you have a customer base problem, right? You can't sustain your business.
Right.
So, you know, change or die, right? And I hate to put that, but that is a principle of capitalism.
Yep.
It is very much a principle of capitalism. And, you know, the government puts regulatory issues for the safety of the public. You know, it's safety of the public. You're part of serving the public. So you got to figure out how to, you know, make these things work. We wouldn't have to introduce laws if the industry, you know, took everything, took care of itself, and it wouldn't have to hear about any problems.
Yeah.
So we did this all through COVID. I talked about supply chain a lot over the course of last year.
Yep.
And sometimes there's no public policy can do anything about getting more aluminum. It's out of my control.
Right.
But it's very important to know about these things, about the change of cost of doing business.
So interesting. Another example I just read, I didn't realize there's not any real kind of state mandates regulating doggy daycare centers or kennels, if you will. It's all kind of patchwork among cities and towns. So there's, you know, an advocacy now to kind of make it a statewide, you know, general type of regulation for those types of centers. So there's another good example.
No, very much so. It becomes also an incident rate. So one of the things that we need to figure out on consumer issues is how many incidents there are.
Right.
And if there's a high ratio of incidents relative to the customer served, you know, then clearly is something wrong, or is an isolated incident towards one business. If it's only one out of, you know, 1,000 that has an issue, but can be resolved at municipal level regarding business licensing and health codes, and the other ones are all fine.
Yep.
Is there really a need for a statewide law if there's already an existing mechanism at the local level?
Right.
You know, changing a law doesn't change people's behavior. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. So that's another one we're looking at, trying to figure out, you know, what the true rapid abuse is. Is it mm-hmm. a lot, or is it just isolated? And there's also the patchwork issue. For example, you know, even in things like animal shelters, people truly support the animal shelters, but, you know, as a consumer, do you really know a lot about the pet you want to care for and adopt and love? How much documentation do you receive? Do you receive mm-hmm. all the health records? Do you know the vaccinations for them? For your potential companion is? Do you know what the complete health records are? Do you know the history of the potential companion, right? I hate to put this crudely, but it is a major investment in your life financially, and you do want to know. Same thing in this dog daycare issue, so to speak, mm-hmm. dog sitting, dog housing. Do you have enough information about the facility to have confidence in you? And the second thing is that the other animals in the facility, does the facility have information about those animals they're caring for that could potentially reduce these negative incidences that an animal gets hurt by another animal, then the trainer gets hurt and the care worker gets hurt and all these other other just bad things happen, right? So we don't have an answer for that in the committee level. It's another thing we're now digging into as well. Whether it needs state action, is there enough incidences? What is the impact on the business and employees? And, you know, do the consumers know what they're getting into when they pick and choose these businesses to care for their companions?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't envy you, Tacky. You have a lot on your plate.
Well, I mean, it's a busy committee. I still got to do it for the expansion of alcohol licensing. You saw the ballot question.
Yep.
Last year submitted by the Package Store Association basically double up nearly the number of beer and wine licenses available for retail statewide on the quota system. Much more than that in that bill, but it's a little complicated to go into right now. There's been some 30-odd ballot questions submitted.
Mm-hmm.
On last Wednesday, Attorney General has to reveal generally less than 5 actually survive the review process. Some will actually come to my committee, some won't. I mean, people are aware that I have the right to repair issue of cars that I'm watching carefully in the federal courts. There might be a decision this fall, but it's going to get appealed. I know it's going to get appealed. No matter what decision, it's going to get appealed in federal court. These are very big money interests. This is not your car shop down the corner that does repairs paying for this lawsuit. This is big money nationally.
Yep.
On both sides, the manufacturers and the supporters of right to repair, the big money. So, which also leads to you should think about why are there big money people representing your local repair?
Well, we all remember all the, I mean, the ads were just ubiquitous during the campaign, you know, for sure. Yeah.
They're spending millions of dollars. I don't think your local repair shop spending millions of dollars. So as we talk about special interests, I mean, you're watching this is something you should keep in mind as you're thinking about it. Well, where are these guys getting their money? What's really funding it? Right. I always look for the dollars as part of my job.
Follow the money. Yes. Yeah.
I always follow the money. Always. And I'm not saying it's inherently bad.
Right. No, right. Yeah.
But it's due diligence and the need to for people to be coming with open eyes and just not ignore that is the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if you're the Sierra Club or Right to Repair or MassPerg or AIM. Or the Boston Chamber of Commerce, it really doesn't matter. I mean, there's always going to be a money component. And I'm not oblivious to that. Or again, it's good or bad. It's just that you should be aware of the totality of the circumstances.
Yeah.
So, I obviously got those issues going on. Obviously I have the Department of Professional Licensure Enforcement Bill I'm working on. We're trying to push out some small pieces regarding small regulatory changes in various boards of registration. We had a bill regarding housing discrimination to prevent brokers from engaging in discrimination in sale and rental of homes and apartments. an issue we need to dive into a little more. I know that the realtors are looking to change the education requirements to include anti-discrimination as part of mandatory education. But again, I mean, there are things happening. It may not be always in my backyard. It may be in someone else's backyard. But as a legislature, legislator and committee chair, it's not all about just Quincy all the time. It is all Quincy all the time, but not in every instance. I do have to take into consideration the other 159 members of the House, the opinions of the 10 House committee members, the Senate chair, and the additional five senators of the committee, as well as the opinions of all the different legislators to file bills, as well as the various, you know, people, interest, testimonies from both interest groups and private citizens who are not a part of an interest group, the various opinions.
Yeah, well, I mean, truth is, you know, you may need their support for an issue in Quincy and vice versa. So it behooves everybody to work collaboratively.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of undervalued in my level of government, is that it's not, you know, just about me or you. It's really about our neighbors next to us and the need for legislators to try to help out other parts of the community and other parts of the state through the nature of being a committee chair, which is part of being leadership.
Yep. Which brings us to, how do folks do that, Jackie? How do they get a hold of you?
Well, it's 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Just hit any button and get a staffer. It has been brought to my attention, however, my staff is taking vacation. I am not taking vacation right now.
I was going to ask you about vacation. Okay.
I'm not taking vacation right now because I'm here with you, obviously. But I would try to get a little time off at some stage, maybe a day here, a day there.
Okay.
But my staff is taking some vacation in the month of August. I suspect we're going to go out hot out of the gate after Labor Day. In the House, I think our good speaker will put a very aggressive agenda going to fall.
Okay.
It's going to be busy, but you know, the staff is aware that to let people know they're not at the office if they are taking vacation that day. You always email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. You know, I do have a Facebook page at State Representative Tacky Chan. Please don't message me there. It doesn't always get caught properly, but for some reason Facebook Messenger on my phone will make messages disappear sometimes, which just don't even stop me.
Okay.
Just don't stop me with Facebook Messenger.
Maybe Mark Zuckerberg just doesn't like them, so.
Yeah, it's easily one of not my favorite messaging interfaces.
Okay.
When you get into large volume, you start getting hundreds. You guys can tell how much you like Facebook Messenger. So it's not always the most conducive medium.
Okay.
And same thing putting comments. I mean, if you have this false impression that you comment on a post 3 days ago, suddenly want to like find your comments. Doesn't quite work that way.
Yeah, it's lost in the ether. Yeah.
Yeah, unless you're spending every waking moment, you know, monitoring your comment sections. I mean, I got too many other mediums going on.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, but obviously telephone, email directly to us is the best way. And, you know, tackychan.org, you know, does put out some local information that may be helpful to you and phone numbers and other websites and social services. So,
okay.
You know, I'm around in August.
Yes.
You're going to see me on Sunday at the festival for a little while. And then maybe I'll get to my lawn if it's dry enough.
And cool enough, because right now we're in the middle of another heat wave. Sounds good. Good to see you, Tacky. Appreciate it.
Good to see you. I will talk to you another week.
Sounds good.